Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Pit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100 as well as an instant pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
It's not clear to me that I think there will exist a general purpose device that does everything you want, because I don't think the whole world's going to be able to afford 5 devices per person in the bubble of Terranea.
Wilson! Wilson, where are you?
Swimming.
Wilson!
Here comes the music right now.
Wilson!
3, 2, and...
Wilson, 1. Where are you?
Go!
Nothing gets in our way! Boom! Keep coming hard.
Oh, jeez, I forgot
hardcore.
About the Steve Ballmer clip. God damn it.
What up? It was. What up, plant? What up, spider plant? I love my plants. I got 5 plants here. I love my plants. I water them every day. You should too. Don't ever let your plants die. If you're one of those motherfuckers out there, I come to your house and your plant's not alive, I'm leaving. I'm out. I'm sorry. Not what we're doing here. Anyway, welcome to the Friday Mailbag. I'm Jade Hoy. Eden Liu is still on vacation.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, the way up.
So, but I guess the guys are getting started.
Yeah. All right.
Take it away.
Secret. Asian man.
Dude, I
said you recorded that song a while ago, right? Like a couple years ago?
At least a year.
And then the video.
I'm trying. I'm working on all these, like, the most obscure thing I could think of. Without, like, I like to do these exercises with art in general just to get yourself out of, like, comfort zones. Where you're, you know how you always, you start, you figure something out, then you start to do it, and you're like, okay, this is my thing. And that becomes tedious after a while, because, you know what I mean? It's like you want to do something else, but you can't figure out what to do. So you kind of just like do, the rule is simply anything goes, without judgment, you know what I mean? You know, you just do things without being like, does this work? You know what I mean? Like, you just do it, because it's a fun exercise. So that's the rule is anything goes. So, like, lately I've just been making these really abstract videos. Very short, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much fun. It's like I'll come on to something and I'll just sit there and like work on it for 3 or 4 hours over, you know, because I had nothing to do last night. I'm dying to. I'm actually, the other thing is when you come across an idea, like I did the same thing when I worked on Ethan's trailer. I just put something together and I sent it over to Ethan. As a joke, you know what I mean? It's just like, I'm going to make this thing. His book with the Kevin Durant berating him. But then Ethan was like, he picked up on it. He was like, oh, we can do something with this, you know? And then like 3.5 months later, we had something really, really good. So I do it half as like, will this person, I learned this from Ethan, but the hope is that, you know, the other person will be like, oh, this is cool, you know? I sent it over to Waz, but I got nothing in return. But he's just like, what the hell is Jade doing now?
I mean, it's important to follow inspiration when you have it, though.
Did
like,
I send,
when an
did
idea I, strikes, like, make the most of it and follow it to its fullest extent.
Did I send you my anti-Zoom video?
No.
Oh, my God. I'll send it over. It's really funny. It's super short, too. It's like 10 seconds. I'm so tired of these Zoom interviews.
Right.
They're so stupid. Like, what are we doing here, you know?
It's definitely taken, like, a lot of the... It's taken the pressure off, but it's taken the artistry out of it at the same time, you know?
It's just, like, I don't know how many people actually just sit because they're so bad. They're hard to get through, right? So I used to love the pressers after the game. It was one of my favorite things. And because it's, you know, for the most part, they're clear. Everyone's hearing things. But now in these circumstances, like the other day, I was watching the one with Greg Popovich at the Team USA thing because I was looking for stuff for Kevin Love. And I found it, but you go through it and it's just so discombobulating. Like you got Greg Popovich, who's old man, right? It's hard to hear. People have their mute buttons unmuted. There's noise coming through. It's a mess. There's basketballs being bounced in the back. It's just a mess, you know? And I was inspired to create something. I'll send it over. But I always picture myself as back in Wesleyan. I really wish I had like the technology there is today for back then, because I really probably would have been a video artist, like a visual artist. And I would have had a gallery of all these projects I come up with. It would be so cool. It'd be so cool. That's how I think of it, though. I just create things as if I'm in a like a museum or something. Not a museum, but a art gallery thing, modern art. They will gel. And you would go through and look at all these abstract pieces. I did one yesterday with I posted it actually. I don't post many of these. But did you see Zuckerberg on the hoverboard with the flag?
Yeah, my dad actually asked a trivia question about that last night because my dad hosted trivia last night and I did not see this video, so let me look it up now. But yeah, it was this 4th of July hoverboard.
It's just one of these things that's like, what is he doing? What the hell is Zuckerberg doing? Check it out. And I believe, it's hard to know these days, but I believe the actual song that they chose for it is the John Denver West Virginia song.
Mm-hmm.
And all I did was simply replace the song.
Oh my God.
Did you see that?
Oh man, this guy. Is that even a hoverboard? What is that?
It's one of these water hoverboards. It's not a hoverboard. It goes
in. It's not
a
hoverboard because it's got something in the water.
It just, yeah, it's an illusion.
Oh my God, this guy.
What is he
doing? Yeah, I mean, he had that photo of him with, like, the sunblock on a surfboard, like, a few months back that also really blew up because he just looked so toasty white. But I guess he's into water sports, so good for him. You know, you got billions of dollars and you're running Facebook. Why not get out on the water as much as possible, man?
I did another one last week with Steve Ballmer. Of all the crazy Steve Ballmer clips that are out there, I talked about this last week. But it's just fun. It's fun to actually work on stuff without any purpose or like reason, you know, as opposed to like a job thing.
Yeah, I mean, you're just stretching your creative legs there.
It works
the
too,
whole
like
culture.
Even, like I've been trying to get off the computer and do stuff, you know. So I just started drawing here, and I'm a terrible artist. I've never been a good drawing artist, but I love it. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things where you don't do it because you feel you're not good enough to do it. But at the same time, when you do it, you love it. So it's a strange thing, you know? It's like, so why not do it? Because I find myself on the computer too much. And like, I don't know how to get off sometimes. That's what she said. And so I just started doing it just to do it. Like, you have to kind of, like, just, I don't know. You force yourself into activities you feel like you're not good at. You know, and you just do it. Who cares? You like it. So what's it? You know what I mean? I've always had this. It's like, you're the only one that matters. Ultimately, it could be the worst thing ever. But if you like it, then it's great. You know, you have to like, it's hard to disconnect yourself from praise. So you oftentimes,
I mean, it's an important thing as an artist to stretch yourself and to do things that you're not good at doing, and to, you know, not necessarily put that out and seek criticism on it, but just kind of experiment. And then, yeah. And then you'll come back with like a different perspective on what you have to do, you know, what your main thing is.
And you know where I got this from? Like, and I've always known this. This goes way back to when I studied experimental music at Wesleyan. I learned that. And the other thing about it is you can get yourself out of the judgment aspect by creating rules. So you can just say, these are the established rules of creating this piece. You follow those rules and whatever you have at the end is it. And you don't have to worry about it. It's like, those are just following the rules, you know? That was something I learned at Wesleyan when I studied like John Cage and Alvin Lucier, these experimental musicians that would like, you know, an example would be having 15 people on a stage, all of them pushing around different objects on the stage, and these sounds that get created that's it. You know what I mean? So you could have like a big ladder or like a chair, and you push them around this wooden floor, and it creates these noises that are really cool when you just step back and listen. And
this is like amateur stomp.
I think so. But I learned it just recently. It came up with Tarantino, you know, because he doesn't follow any type of convention, you know? And I was watching the Rogan interview with him. I don't know if you checked it out, but
yeah, it was like 3 hours or something, right?
Oh, these things are too long, aren't they?
And well, Rogan can just keep going, man.
Rogan can't keep up with Tarantino either. And it was, he kept cutting him off too. And he does it in a way that like Tarantino will say a name, and then it's like, what do you think of that guy? You know what I mean? Like, so he was doing this great thing at the beginning. He was going through, I guess Tarantino's starting a podcast where they're going to talk about movies in particular time periods, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was doing this incredible breakdown of 80s movies. And he was talking about the difference between Chevy Chase and Bill Murray. And it was fascinating until Rogan sidetracks him on what you think of Chevy Chase. And I was like, no. Let him keep going, man. You know? Kept doing it and I tuned out after an hour. I couldn't do two more hours of Rogan interrupting Tarantino. You know, like that's the type of guy you just let go. Just let him go. You know, he's so like full of like crazy information. He's really smart, you know, and he knows.
He's doing a whole podcast circuit right now. I mean, it looks he did incredible. He did the Ringer. He did the Dax Shepard show. He did 3 hours with Joe Rogan.
He was on the Ringer with Bill.
He does the Big Picture with Sean Fennessy and Chris Ryan.
Oh, wow.
And they definitely give him a lot more room to just kind of go. So, but he's done a couple of things with them before. So,
Was?
Yeah, Was. Was, so Tarantino, same thing. Wozni Lambrantino.
Actually,
I'd like to ask Quentin about some of that Weinstein stuff. You
know? Dude, that came up. It came up in the Rogan. And that's another thing I kept wanting to hear.
I'd like for it to come from somebody with more credibility than Joe Rogan. that's what I would like.
The Weinstein stuff did come up, though, and Tarantino talked about it. And, you know, he mentioned that Weinstein was a father figure to him. A fucked up father figure, right? And all fathers are fucked up, he said. That's so true. And, it was that came up a couple times. I like when he's in a setting with, something.
So, how's life since the war?
Got both my legs. Both my arms. I can't complain.
Got a woman?
Fever took her, started this last winter.
What was her name?
Betsy.
Georgia gal?
Augusta. Atlanta boy, Augusta girl. I used to raise Kentucky horses. Her pa was the owner of the breedership where I bought most of my ponies.
Oh, goddammit.
I made a good deal on her. Took the stake he gave me and bought a bunch of peach orchards. Set myself up pretty well. Did a hell of a lot better than either one of my no good brothers, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, your boy come up here a few years back. He spoke highly of his mama, too.
You knew my boy?
Did I know him? Yep. Yeah, I knew him.
I mean, I still don't. Like, I watched Hateful Eight again this week. I was telling you, Maze. I don't understand how he made that movie. It's just so goddamn good. It's so good. And you know what's fascinated by it? Like, I very rarely watch credits to the end.
Do you?
I watch the credits to the end in Hateful Eight. And it's just like the amount of people that worked on these projects is incredible.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. Like, I'm curious what it would have been like, because wasn't that the one where the script got leaked?
Yes.
Before they started making it, yeah. I wonder how different it became just from a movie making standpoint. Not even just like what's the change in the script, but like from a movie making standpoint, I wonder how different it became.
Well, he talks about this a lot, and he was very very upset by that, obviously, because his plan was to create. So he wrote the script, the original script, which got leaked. But his plan was originally to keep writing the script, right? Which he ended up doing too. So he was going to write the first one. And when he talks about it, he says he never intended to know how the movie was going to end. And so he kept writing different versions of the script from different people's perspectives. And then eventually got to where he did. But so his plan was essentially just to keep writing. And then within that script, he had written, I think I said this last week, he wrote like mini books for each character. you know what I mean, to raid. And then I'm like, how does this guy do all this? He's a credit, like, he's a really industrious, you know?
Prolific, go on prolific there, yeah. Just that movie. I mean, that's the kind of thing you have to do, though. You have to write way more, and you have to do way more work to condense it down to a final product. I mean, that's the same approach I use on Cinephobe, you know? Just let Amin drunkenly ramble for 45 minutes and turn that into 15 minutes of good shit.
And then
this guy, I mean,
every time they would watch the rough cuts in a theater too. Like they would actually once a week, they would go to like an actual big screen theater and watch this stuff, the rough cuts, instead of like an Avid. That movie's so good though. It's so good. It's just amazing. I'm like, that's the thing that like, oftentimes these interviews get bogged down in like who you are and what it's like to be you. You know what I mean? What it was like to work in a video store and now you're who you are. I don't know. Sometimes I really want to hear about him making stuff more, you know? Fascinating guy.
My guy that I stalk accidentally, Walton Goggins in the movie. Love me some Walton Goggins.
Which guy's that?
That's he's the one with the big teeth. White guy with the big teeth who is Chris enamored Mannix. With the what?
Chris Mannix. Chris, that's his character name. Chris Mannix.
That's you, Chris Mannix.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, friend. Do we know each other?
Not quite.
You know this fella?
Only by reputation.
Like I said, friend, you got me at a bit of a disadvantage.
Keeping you at a disadvantage is an advantage I intend to keep.
Whoever you are, mister, you sure sound tough when you're talking to a desperate man knee-deep in snow. I don't want no trouble. I just want to ride. I'm freezing to death.
Who is this joker?
You heard of the rebel renegade Erskine Mannix.
Mannix Marauders?
That's them. Scourge of South Carolina. Mannix
Marauders. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Erskine's youngest boy, wow. Chris.
Okay, yeah, him. I thought you were making a Chris Mannix, like, he looks like Chris Mannix joke. I was like,
No.
I mean, I love him in everything. Like, he's Baby Billy in Righteous Gemstones. He was on The Shield, which is, one of my favorite shows ever.
The Shield,
like,
and Justified, yeah.
I've still never seen Justified.
Yeah, Canton really liked it. I mean, it's got Oliphant and Walton Goggins, so
yeah, I've heard it's amazing.
How could it be bad with those two guys? But
wait, he's in the movie.
What movie?
Wait. I'm sorry. Righteous Gemstones is the show.
The show, yeah.
Oh, I'm getting it confused with the Sandler movie. What's the Sandler movie?
Oh, Uncut Precious Gems. Or Uncut, right, yeah. Uncut Gems. Yeah,
Righteous. I never watched Righteous Uncut Gemstones.
How is that?
It's great. It's the comedic Danny McBride. You know what's the word? The preacher is the get rich religious. I can't. There's a term for it.
Oh, like mega
church. They have a mega church.
The televangelist.
They're not. I don't think they're on TV. But yeah, it's just turning religion into.
No, they're on TV.
A franchise.
Weren't they performing the Misbehaving on TV?
I think
they're televangelists.
Live, but yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how you make more money, so it makes sense.
Yeah. I've always been curious about going into one of those mega churches.
I know. Me too.
Nah.
Me too.
Just to experience it. As someone who's no longer religious. I'm not against... I guess I'm against the... business of religion, but I'm not against the idea of religion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot
but
of sense.
But just to experience like what that is, because like it's funny, like I follow so many people who say so much religious shit, right? In like earnestly, like I mean one of my friends who I used to like be a wingman for, and now he's like settled down with a wife and kids and he's super religious, and I always just think I'm like, you? Like, yeah, like you're this religious guy now? Because I would have never seen that coming. But he's like, and it's like, it's earnest.
mean, these people really believe it and really believe it's drawing the success to them. And I don't mean this in like a patronizing way or demeaning way or anything, but I am genuinely like fascinated by that.
Does he put out the quotes from the Bible?
The Bible quotes. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm always like, I don't understand the Bible. I saw some person
the other day that's like, I'm heading to Bible study on a boat. I was like, just say you're going on a boat. Like, what are you? Bible study on a boat? Yeah, put me on a boat. I'll go fucking study the Bible too.
Oh man, I've never really been a religious person, but I do believe in it for sure. Because ultimately, you get to a point where there's nothing more, right? That's what God is to me. It's the unknown, right? We don't know what we're living in, right? The world and stuff like that. Like, you think you kind of know it, but you don't. And as far as you could possibly go into your, you know, knowledge of the existence, you'll always get to the point of like, what was before the Big Bang? Like, to me, that's always what God is to me, you know? Also, you know, just general kindness. That's always a religious aspect for me.
Well, yeah, the practices of religion, the tenets of like, do unto others as they would do unto you, and offering people support and community are all good things, totally. But it's more the someone is pulling the strings, and you've gotta talk to them in a one-sided conversation that lasts your whole life. That kind of misses me, I suppose.
When I was a kid, there was like, well, at least where I was, like you would meet people that were reborn.
Born again. You know?
Born again. Yeah.
Born
again. I don't really meet many people like that. I hit the church with the kids last year because I was friends with the local.
Like you were robbing it? Like
a I was robbing the donuts.
Me and the kids hit the church.
Well, I want them to.
Before dawn.
My grandparents were, especially my grandmother, very Catholic. Very Catholic. To me, with my grandmother, the life that she had, and she never was one to push it on you, you know? It was her own, that was the way she was brought up. So my 101-year-old grandma.
Right.
Still living.
I wasn't religious as a young child. Like, my parents weren't really into that. And then when I went to Catholic elementary school, then my mom was like, hey, you know what? I'll become Catholic. You become Catholic. We'll do it together and we'll see if you like it. Right. Like, and so I did like the altar boy stuff and communion and all that shit. Right.
I didn't know
that. And I did that for a few years, and this is from like, I don't know when they do that. I don't know if that's like second grade to fifth grade or whatever that was, but it was a few years. And so like, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I was introduced to it. I went to Catholic school nearly my entire kindergarten through high school education. And so it was obviously a big part of it. And you did theology classes and stuff like that. So I'm glad I like was experienced to it and exposed to it, but it definitely didn't stick in terms of like, yeah, I want to make this for lack of a better word, like a religious part of my life, right? Like there was a certain point where I was just kind of like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. My mom was like, yeah, that's fine. And my dad didn't give a shit. My dad's not religious at all. So he didn't care.
Jacob did 1 through 8 at St. Francis of Assisi.
Oh yeah. St. Francis of Assisi.
I don't know why my parents didn't send me, but Jacob, the whole thing I remember as a kid was,
they just wanted Jake to be the good kid.
Well, it was funny because I'd always get the, thank God we sent Jake to Catholic school because he could write. Like, you know, all the basic things in education, like being able to write and read, you know, whereas I was like the, you know, I was the kid plagiarizing my brother's papers to hand in, you know, which I was doing. So I was doing that. Oh man. Turned out all right. Just fine. I was baptized by my grandma walking into a church one day.
She just threw water on you?
Yeah.
Said the power of Christ compels you or whatever?
She's always been, she's still, and I keep meaning to do it because, like, I want to get my kids baptized just for my grandma.
You know?
It's just to make her happy because it means a lot to her. And I don't necessarily care. What's the harm in it? You know? Hey, maybe it's true. You know? You never know. But yeah, she just, I was attending church with them when I would stay there in North Carolina every summer, my great summer camp. And we were just walking in one day. She's like, threw holy water on my forehead. Say, you're baptized now.
Yeah, I'm not well versed in the church, but I'm pretty sure that's not how it works. I think that's more of an approach to like scare off a vampire.
I'll say this. I seen my grandmother in a couple different occasions, and this time, the one time I saw her really high level functioning in religion in the church was at my uncle's second wedding when he got remarried, and I was like, I was really impressed. My grandmother just like was amazing when she got up and spoke. It was all because my uncle's religious too, and it was all really deeply rooted in the faith, and I was just like, my grandma could have been a priest, essentially, you know. So there's the only caveat.
My grandma that Amin sent to hell on Thanksgiving years ago, she used to make fun of me for becoming Catholic because she was Lutheran.
Yeah.
And I guess that was important to her. And so she would like, I'm like 8 or 9 years old, Catholic, because like my mom's like, hey, let's try it out and see what happens, right? And going to a Catholic school and all this stuff. And my grandma would like tease me like, oh, you just want to become the Pope. And I remember thinking at one point, I'm like, I'm a child.
Maybe I do.
Take that up with my parents. Why are you saying it to me?
Maybe I do. The Lutherans are interesting too, because, Luther, when the great, Protestant revolution there, I learned about this. The priests were insane at that point. What was going on? You could literally buy yourself into having women. So if you paid a tax, like not a tax, but a fee, forget what it's called. But if you paid money to the church, they would allow you to have women. It's just like all these tenets of the faith were being bought and sold, essentially, you know? And that was one of the things that led to the Great Reformation there. So
you know what drives me crazy is the, as much as like super religious people can drive me crazy, super atheist people drive me insane as well. Because like atheism has become a religion, right?
Yeah.
In an ironic way. I'm more agnostic. Like I'm open to the idea that something's out there.
Right.
Something greater than us. Right. But I'm not going to be like, yes, I can see it when I see the clouds, or like, no, that's stupid. That's make believe. Like, I don't know. So why am I, I'm not going to pretend to like have an actual formed opinion on it. But the atheists out there, like you guys are fucking annoying too. I don't know if that's intentional. I don't know if you're going. I don't know if that's the whole internet thing of like you say Chris Paul's great, so I'm going to say he sucks. We're going to even it out. Yeah, I don't know what that is.
I think it is the same. I think it's the same for pretty much whatever it is that you're into. If you can't accept that other people have a different opinion about anything, if you believe that your opinion has to be it, and you are oppressive to people who disagree with you, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. Now, if it gets into like, I don't give a shit if you're religious. Now, if your religious, foundation means that you're like, I don't think gay people are right. All right. Now I have a problem with it. Right. Like, I think that's the stuff I have an issue with. But like, yeah, you want to believe in God and, say these prayers and think that that's going to, make life better for you.
That works for you. Whatever
gets you through the day. Yeah. If you want to not believe in it, whatever gets you through the day.
Yeah.
Just don't tell me what to do.
I think that's just this. I always see it as both. It is both to me. Like there's the absence of God and then there's God. And it depends on what day it is, where you know how you're feeling. It's so many different factors going on. It's like a yin yang thing, you know. If I was to apply any religion to me, it would be that. It would be like more of an Eastern style.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do like prayer, for instance, is simply like meditation. You know, it's like you're taking yourself.
It really, yeah, that's a great point. It really is. Yeah.
You're removing yourself from the chaos of society for a moment.
You're centering yourself. Yeah.
And it's just, that's what it is to me. Like, and you'll find that by doing that sometimes it's really healthy, you know, because it'll give you just a perspective that these things that are going on in your mind are things that drag you down a lot of times. Stress, you know. These things that you think are so important, ultimately they're not. And you have to provide the space to yourself in order for that to happen, you know. And it's really important that you know, my grandmother prays. She prays all the time. And she tells me that she prays for us, you know, me and the kids and all that stuff. And I like that because you think about the people that really matter in your life, that really matter, you know, especially in this day and age. You think you have a lot of these friends on social media that you think are friends. You've never even met them. You know what I mean?
Right.
You've never even hung out with these people.
Have you ever done that thing, though, where like you've like really vibe with someone on social media and then you go and meet them in real yes. life? You're like, well, this is not.
I mean, we're lucky. I don't like this. We're lucky because we had all those live shows, you know?
Yeah.
Where we got to, in the flesh, meet all these people that you're like, damn, it's so different. And
yeah. And 90% of them were cool. 90% of them were great.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I would say 99.
No, it's 90. You know if you're in that 10%.
You know who you are. Yeah,
you know who you are.
Did we meet Sussman on the same time, first time ever?
Yes, right?
I can't remember.
Yeah, because didn't he
in LA? Were you
did
there?
He fly us out to LA?
Well, I had that thing I did. It was the last sidecast. It wasn't the first sidecast.
That's when it was. Yeah. Because you brought me out for the sidecast, or somebody brought me out for the sidecast.
Yeah. You were at the first sidecast. But the second one was when I met him. It was the one where it was when Winhurst had accidentally rebooted his phone. Remember this? Where we were live and his phone was, he had installed an update. Rachel Nichols was there.
Yeah.
It wasn't that one with everybody. And I work didn't even know I was there. And they got pissed at me. And that was like right before.
Wasn't that I was you at one point? I was pretending to be you at one point in that corner of that little studio.
Shit.
I think I was over there at once. I was filling in at one point. Maybe you were getting there or you had to like go do something for work and pretend you weren't in LA or something like that. I can't remember what it was. But I remember I was sitting in that chair for you at one point. And then I think that was the one because I remember everybody like went to Arnovitz's house after.
Not
that night, but the next night or something like that.
The enchiladas.
And Sussman showed up and brought like this super expensive bottle of whiskey. Mm. And I remember
That's right.
Is this real or is he showing out? Turns out
$200 bottle of whiskey. Yeah. That's right. My God. My Lord. Amin went off on Woj, huh?
Sweet. Yeah. It's funny how many people who cover sports media were at least pretending to be surprised by that.
You know what's funny is that looking back,
I've heard you guys talk about it for a long, long time.
If you cover sports media, have you actually talked to anybody in this stuff?
So
none of that was a revelation.
The people that are the TV people, well, Curtis is good. I like Brian Curtis.
Brian Curtis is great. Yeah.
Like the others are like, why?
But he's an actual journalist.
What do you do for a job? I don't get this at all.
Right. You watch First Take and then you're like, oh, the ratings are up. Like, that's what it is. I don't know.
I'm convinced, though, if looking back, you know, I really think that I was put into a position that was essentially an ESPN leave, Jade. That's how I think of it now. At the time, yeah. I just thought these people were crazy. But now when I think back on it, I actually think I was put into a position that was like, get out of here. And I think that's because of him.
He got a bunch of people fired and then a bunch of people got put in positions where it's like, do you really want to keep putting up with this stuff? No. Why do you think that is? That's not just by accident.
Yeah, it was too. I think back on it now. I'm like, wait, it doesn't make sense. They knew what I was doing. It was really good. They wanted me out. It was essentially that.
No, that was we're not with him, so we're against him.
Well, just ask me to leave, you know. You know?
No, because then they have to pay you.
Yeah, they want you to think it's your decision.
Yeah, they want you to think it's
your decision. Like, I wish I had known that at the time. You know?
You would have George Costanza that thing?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Anyway.
Yeah, but no, like anything, like if you're shocked by the stuff Amin said, like you're not in this and you don't talk to people in it because none of this is surprising.
I know.
None of this.
It's funny.
Like I'm blown away by what the reaction was. I'm like, what? Woj? Like, what the fuck have you been paying attention to?
Yep.
Over the last 12 years. This isn't new either. This is a decade plus.
Yeah. Shit. Ethan wrote about it in like 2010.
And that's what got him fired.
Essentially. Yeah.
That's what got him fired is writing about it as a blogger, not for ESPN, back in 2010. Noticing that he was being fucking weird about LeBron James because LeBron's people wouldn't give him information. And so he's trashing him every loss, every chance he gets. And Ethan's like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
That got him fired years later. Get out of here, man.
Amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, somebody posted it in a True Hoop Pod Reddit. The Warriors Dude. World blog.
Yeah.
From July 19th, 2010.
Dude, it's actually so innocuous, too.
Recently.
Like it's the reason like I do not care about saying stuff publicly about him or any of this stuff. Because I know as long as he's at ESPN, I'll never work at ESPN again. Because he would never allow it.
No.
And
no.
So like what? Like and I'm good. Like I love The Athletic. I love SiriusXM. Like fuck, do I care?
I feel the same, and I think about that too. I'm like, am I doing this? Am I gonna ruin my chances to ever go back to ESPN? If in case I have to, you know. But I don't care. It's not worth it.
Why would throw him on TV as much as you want and try to justify that contract? I don't care.
Terrible. Terrible. By the way, Matt Damon's out in a new movie called Stillwater, which people are raving about. I watched the trailer.
Is this an ad read? What's going on?
I'm like, have you heard of this?
Stillwater promo code.
Matt Damon. Two free movie. Tickets.
I was watching it. It's got a small
production stake in this film.
It's like some weird hybrid that involves Taken. It's like Taken slash something.
A father travels from Oklahoma to France to help his estranged daughter who was in prison for a murder she claims she didn't commit.
So we've got xenophobia. We've got he's an oil rig roughneck, so it's like Armageddon.
He's got a goatee that's very aggressive.
He's a Trump supporter.
His accent. You should hear his accent.
Oh, it's the kid from Little Miss Sunshine. Abigail Breslin.
All grown up.
He's okay. Like Matt Damon, he's a good actor. I've never found him to be a great actor, you know?
Yeah, he's fine. Right?
He's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched the trailer. I enjoyed
The Martian. He was good in The Martian. Like
he's likable though. Like he's a likable actor. Whereas that's not necessarily totally the case for a lot of his peers. Like he's more like
his buddy.
Engaging in personality wise.
Ben Affleck.
Well, he's kind of that's a really interesting which career would you rather have, Damon or Affleck? Because I think Affleck has higher highs somehow. Like he directed an Oscar. He got Best Director Oscar. Like that's probably bigger than anything Matt Damon's done.
For the Iran movie.
Yeah, Argo. But then Matt Damon kind of consistently good, never really any like super low points.
Right.
But then also Ben Affleck dating history A+. So what do you do with that?
We don't know. We never hear about Damon's personal life much.
Right.
We get a lot of it with Affleck because of the women he chooses to date.
Totally. So I mean,
know who Matt Damon dates or married to. Do you?
Married to Luciana Barroso.
Sounds pretty.
From Argentina.
Sounds real.
Oh, he's like a Leonardo type, huh?
No.
No, she's older than 20.
Yeah.
Oh. No, that's right. He dates the super young woman.
And he's been married for 16 years. All
right. Man. That's creepy, right? That Leo still just keeps him at 20, 21 years old.
Well, yeah.
That's creepy.
The girl that he's dating now is like Al Pacino's girlfriend's daughter.
Nice.
And he knew her when she was like 12.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'll say it's creepy.
Yeah, he's 47.
Yeah. That's creepy.
Wait. And also, last thing. What's going on with Richard Branson? What's he doing? He's flying to space this weekend?
Doesn't he do that every weekend? When is he not flying to space?
Decades after
Virgin Galactic?
Hell yeah.
Kickstarts space tourism. All right, I got to read about this.
The billionaires have been competing over this shit. Yeah, space.
Lead on the Wall Street Journal. Space tourism is trying to take off.
Because there's some race between him and Bezos that's happening.
And Elon.
Yeah.
Elon's been way more like vocally in the lead about it. But yeah, Bezos was going to take his dick rocket to space. Now we got Virgin Galactic.
Virgin Galactic is going to take them 50 miles above Earth.
It's like, okay.
That's 50? It. Bitch, take me to the moon.
50? That's
you
it.
Drop me on a space shuttle. Like, I need 50 miles.
Meanwhile, Zuckerberg's just hoverboarding with the American flag. Exactly. So, you know, they're all on their own hype.
I need you to take me higher than Uncle Rico thinks he can throw a football, okay? Like, that's what I need. If I'm paying for Virgin Galactic.
Scott Stamp.
Oh, one last thing. What was going on? What happened with the game last night?
Suns won.
Bucks did nothing to adjust.
The Bucks were great in the first quarter, and it didn't matter because the Suns hit a bunch of threes, and so it was only one possession game after one quarter, and then the Suns kicked their ass in the second quarter, and then Giannis was great in the second half, but no one else did anything, and the Suns hit 20 threes, and they ended up winning. Consistency. Suns have scored 118 points in each of the first two games.
I'm psyched for this Saturday. It's going to be good.
was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that's probably it.
All right. Yeah. Sweet.
Right on, right on, right on.